Welcome to the Senia Happy Hour podcast with your host, Lori Bull. We know you're busy, so we bring you 1 hour's worth of content in under 30 minutes, leaving you time for a true happy hour.
Hello, everyone. Today, I had the opportunity to speak a second time with John Nordmeyer, who is the International Program Director at WIDA at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Now, if you're not sure what WIDA is, no worries. John will fill you in throughout the podcast. Today, we also spoke about DEIJ and its relationship to EAL students. We talked about challenges with the intersectionality of multilingualism and neurodiversity, how EAL and learning support teachers can better work together, the importance of co-teaching and co-planning, and how specialist roles are changing in schools. John also shares a bit about what he'll be presenting at our South Africa conference and has a pretty big announcement to share as well. So now, on to the show. Well, hello, John, and welcome back to our podcast.
Hi, Lori. It's good to see you again. Happy New Year, and thanks for the chance to join you again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's your second time that you've joined us for a podcast. You're a longtime friend of Senia. I mean, how long have we known each other? But a very long time.
You've
been a valued speaker at our past conferences, and you'll be joining us in South Africa in February for our conference at the American International School of Johannesburg. We'll be talking much more about that later in the episode, but for now, can you tell us about your organization, WIDA? Remind people who may not have heard your first podcast or have seen you present. What is it and how has it grown over the years?
Sure. Well, I am excited to talk a little bit more about Johannesburg and the Senia Africa Conference, and I really appreciate being included in that. I'm the International Program Director at WIDA, and WIDA is a project at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It's coming up on its 20-year anniversary, actually. WIDA, the origin story, it grew from a federal grant to develop an assessment to measure English language development to ensure accountability that states were serving multilingual learners, English learners, to ensure that the programs were successful and the students were identified and served. So it really came out of an accountability origin, and it's grown from the initial grant of a couple states to 41 U.S. states with the flagship assessment, the language assessment access for ELLs. And in the past 10 years, we have added international schools to the WIDA family. So right now we have 560 schools that are members of the WIDA International School Consortium. And all these schools are committed to building equitable programs to serve multilingual learners and work together with the WIDA resources across this community of practice. And as that growth continues, I have some exciting news about the next iteration, the next evolution of this network that I think we'll have a chance to discuss at the end of the pod.
Oh, well, I can't wait. Can't wait to hear it.
I'll leave you hanging.
Okay, gosh. All right. Well, let's see, 568 schools and all of those in the U.S. as well. I'm impressed. You're 20 years old, just like Senia. So
yeah.
Congrats.
Well, both organizations do, you know, similar work in many ways in supporting teachers and students and families who may not be perhaps as successful without teachers and organizations like Senia and WIDA really paying attention to how we can create inclusive schools. So I think I really appreciate the work that Senia has done, and also the fact that the community of international schools has come together around a lot of really important issues.
Yes. Now it's going to be our goal at Senia to get 568 member schools. Right now we have 25. So if you're out there listening and you want your school to join Senya, please do.
So, I highly recommend it.
Yes, me too. So diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's really the mission, as we talked about with both our organizations. How does DEIJ relate to English as an additional language?
It's a great, great question, Lori. And I think whether it's considered EDIJ, DEIJ, JEDI, right. It is a long overdue conversation in international schools about the role of equity and privilege across some really dynamic and innovative, but also quite elite institutions. And so I feel really fortunate to be part of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and the School of Education is committed to rigorous research and social justice. And those two are not mutually exclusive. They're actually complementary. So at the heart of our work is really investigating this intersection of language and equity. And we know that language is not neutral in the classroom, in the playground, the hallway. The language choices that are available or restricted for students has a really direct connection to opportunity and identity. And so I'm actually working on an article with a colleague about this intersection of DEIJ and language. And so a couple, I think, important themes that have emerged is thinking about diversity. Do schools really understand and represent the languages and cultures in their community? And if schools talk about sometimes students from diverse backgrounds or students who represent linguistic and cultural diversity, that actually becomes a form of exclusion by expressing that we have the mainstream and then we have diverse mm-hmm. students or students from diverse backgrounds. So it's both an exclusion and abjection. Some of my colleagues call it a double gesture. And so when we recognize diversity, all students are diverse, and recognizing the language that expresses who students are, that language directly connects to celebrating and leveraging that diversity, the linguistic diversity, as a strength. And likewise, equity, beyond the surface level conceptions of fairness, when students come to a school with a gift of multilingualism, but they don't have full access to the curriculum, something needs to be done. And so thinking about how EAL teachers can be advocates, that students who are in their first 6 months, we don't accept that it's a silent period, but we maybe recognize that it's a silencing period if we're not allowing or encouraging students to use their home language as a way to access the curriculum and to use translanguaging as a tool for learning. And then with inclusion, really in the last 10 years, I feel like we've made a lot of progress in international schools, considering what it looks like to not just include all students across the diverse spectrum of learning diversity and multilingualism and students from a variety of different backgrounds, but really leveraging universal design to recognize that students are not just included, but they're meaningfully engaged and have access to the curriculum. And it's one of the things that excites me about the Senya conference theme for Senya Africa is that we need to move beyond the label. We need to stop labeling students and recognize that all students are different and all students have a unique learning profile, and that we can build on that experience as a real strength. And the last theme, I think, is justice, connecting to language and recognizing how systems work and challenging discrimination is part of the role of being an EAL teacher. And in this case, teachers and organizations like Senya and WIDA are asking international schools how they can be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And we recognize, again, that for too long, elite institutions have been designed to exclude and to perpetuate privilege rather than challenge it. And it's uncomfortable for a lot of schools and a lot of leaders, but that's why we need to keep asking the questions, even if we don't have good answers. And the role of language, language policy, is absolutely connected to DEIJ, and particularly thinking about how we create just, equitable, inclusive schools.
Yes. you said so much, and I'm processing it, but just a connection with the work that we do at Senya is that whole idea of ableism, and focusing on the where our typical learners are, or even using words such as normal, and we end up isolating our students who we say have different learning needs. But as you mentioned, we all have different learning needs. And so just, supporting all of our learners with that lens is just essential. And the work you're doing and the work Senya is doing hopefully helps with that.
I think there's some really important intersections. And I think that we need to recognize that when we're coming from a learning support perspective or a language perspective, that it's part of a wider conversation about how schools can be schools for all students, how all teachers can share responsibility for all learners. And I think what we've seen in schools emerging over the last decade is that a commitment to DEIJ is not yet another initiative, but it actually is a platform that connects a lot of really important populations in schools and issues across schools. And so it's not that, inclusion is just another initiative on the plate. It is the plate. And so we need to think about how we're doing that for really schools to serve their mission and serve all students.
I love that. It is the plate. I'm going to share that with many, many people. That's perfect.
Please do.
And well, I'm
excited to be able to have this conversation with you, because I think organizations that serve a particular population or come from a particular disciplinary background really need to work together and find strength in that connection and that intersection.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So we've been alluding to this, but what are some challenges and opportunities around the intersection of multilingualism and neurodiversity? And how can EAL and learning support teachers, how can they work together?
Yeah, I love this question, because I think it really is a classic problem-tunity that this intersection is can be challenging historically, but also is really necessary and important for the students that we serve. I think our work is parallel. And when we think about all teachers sharing responsibility for all students across a school community, learning support and EAL teachers become resources, not only for students, but also for colleagues. And this is part of an identity shift in the field, where we've shifted away, or we're in the process of shifting away from withdrawal or pullout or isolated interventions, which really fragment a student's day and isolate students and teachers. So moving from that fragmentation and segregation to a more inclusive school experience that focuses on integration and inclusion and collaboration. So I think that we have that in parallel as to fields, to disciplines working to that end. And then I think at the same time, learning support and EAL teachers bring really specific, specialized expertise to conversations when we're talking about students. And we think about how students learn best and what we know about students' unique learning profiles and how students develop language and some of the diagnostic tools and the data that are involved in that. It's really important to have professionals with a variety of expertise together talking about how do we serve individual students and build on students' strengths and students' needs. And I think historically some of the division or the barriers have come from policy and funding particularly in contexts like U.S. public schools, where the reality is that students have a legal basis to have a certain label associated with them, and funding often comes with that, or a particular compliance, which is in place to protect students and serve students. But in some cases, that strict binary distinction of needing to choose a label or have one label or the other, I think has created in schools unnecessary barriers to teachers collaborating, or in worst case scenarios, you know, sort of turf wars around resources that really we should be working together to share. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and we're exploring that with organizations like Senya to think about how we can collaborate. But we need to be aware of some of the systemic and historical barriers to collaboration that we face.
Yeah, and I think one of the most harmful is what learning support teachers, probably EAL teachers, often hear is this is your kid, this is your student. And so that's something that we are constantly, it seems, coming up against.
Mm-hmm.
In a classroom or a school.
Right. And I think we are shifting away from that 20th century model of the specialist as expert who has a magic wand, and we can somehow wave that magic wand over students who are considered different and our students, and we can somehow fix those students to go back and join the mainstream regular curriculum taught by the regular teachers. And you can see, Lori, I've got air quotes around all these.
Yes.
And the reality is moving towards a 21st century model where we are collaborating as specialists and working together in the classroom with all students and universally designing in a lot of the language-rich, literacy-rich, accessible instruction that's going to benefit students across a variety of abilities. And in fact, it benefits all students. And I'm sure you've heard that a lot when we talk about universal design with teachers, say, well, wow, this is going to be great for all my students.
Right.
And so I think reducing that barrier of who owns the students, well, we all own the students and they're all of our students. And so collaboration really feeds into that opportunity.
So I'd love to chat more with you about this collaboration piece in schools. So how has collaboration helped transform the role of specialist teachers like us, where we were once serving only as the resource that you've talked about for students, but now we also serve as a resource for students and colleagues?
I think it's exciting, but it's also scary for a lot of specialists, because we need to do better as schools to ensure that as professionals, whether we're learning support or language specialists, that we can be utilized as a resource for the whole school community. And that means supporting students, but also working together with colleagues as a collaborator, in some cases, as a coach or a mentor. And the days of only close my door, give me a few students, and I will play vocabulary games with them, those days are gone. And we know that the real work of learning happens in all classrooms all day long and all subjects. And so the identity shift of specialist teachers working with students directly, but also by extension with colleagues, is exciting because it's generative. And so if you or I are co-teaching with a colleague and we are running an activity, a small group, that activity then becomes part of that teacher's repertoire, and we're able to model and add and co-design learning experiences that enrich what all teachers are able to do. So the generative aspect of being together with teachers, with colleagues, really adds to everyone's toolbox. And then I think the co-planning aspect of our collaboration is a valuable opportunity that's often missed. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that co-planning is as important, if not more important, than co-teaching. Because when we sit down with a team of teachers fourth grade team, and we co-plan a lesson that is scaffolded and integrates a variety of learning opportunities and has support for students across a variety of ability levels, needs, languages. That lesson will be in all those fourth grade classrooms, even if we are not in the fourth grade classroom. So it opens up the door for crossing space and time. And I know we've explored virtual collaboration over the last couple of years, but when we co-plan, whether it's with a Google Doc, over Zoom, or face-to-face, we're able to really raise the collective instructional intelligence of the whole school, the whole team. And I think the last aspect of collaboration is it reduces the historical isolation that teachers have felt. And we've felt that really painfully during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so to have teachers join each other virtually or in person, it introduces energy into the profession. And I think it's every teacher's greatest fear and greatest hope that someone one day discovers what actually happens in our classroom. And yes. To have a colleague see, you know, witness the miracle of creation, and students are asking wonderful questions and answering questions, it's really, it's a rare opportunity. And then in the same way, there are days when it's absolute failure and we just turn off the light, close the door, and we say, we're not going to talk about this again, but have someone else share in that success and failure and be able to sit back and unpack it and analyze it builds the collective efficacy, which we know from John Hattie's work is really at the top of the effect size. So it's not just experiencing it together, but reflecting on those experiences that reduce isolation and help us to really understand our craft better.
Yes. And the important part of co-planning and this observation of other colleagues, this has to come from the top down. We have to have our administrators recognize the importance of this. So perhaps that's something that we can talk about in a future podcast on how we can encourage that with or what different school systems look like, right? Some good examples, some exemplars of schools that are doing this and what it looks like and how we can benefit from it.
100%. I agree. And I think that administrative support is key. I think administrators also don't have a magic wand, but they need to know what collaboration looks like, and they need to know the value of effective co-planning and that is not just extra bodies in the room that's using up FTEs, but it actually is, it has this generative multiplier effect. And so you're right, the teachers need to be scheduled into co-planning meetings. We need to make time for co-planning, and it needs to be deliberately structured into the schedule in the day, and teachers need to have capacity for it to be really successful.
Yes. Well, let's transition a bit to Johannesburg, Africa. You'll be there. We'll be there in about 5 weeks. You'll be doing an all-day pre-conference and keynoting and doing 4 additional workshops, which is amazing. And we're so lucky. Can you just give us a sneak peek?
Yeah, well, I'm excited to attend this conference in South Africa and the opportunity to work with teachers from a variety of backgrounds, both geographic and professional backgrounds. I love the theme, as I mentioned, the intentional integration across disciplines. And my keynote will really focus on the role of student voice, how important it is for educators to not only listen to, but really amplify student voices, particularly students who have been historically at the margins and isolated. And so for us to recognize that we spend a lot of time and frankly, a lot of money on assessment data and adding to what we use from assessments, that is it's a valuable data point, but it's just one data point. So if we think about students' lived experiences and what we can learn from listening to students talk about their learning, students have such insight into the learning experiences, what works for them, how teachers can support them. And when we harvest and leverage the power of student voice, it really helps us serve students better because they're part of the conversation and they have insights into their own learning that complement what we think we know or what we see from assessment data. And my pre-conference will focus on collaboration. I know we've talked about it a lot during this pod, and I know it's something that has been transformative in international schools in particular, and something I'm very passionate about because I've seen the effect that it has on schools and how it can really transform how teachers interact together and has an impact on student learning. We know that from research. So in the pre-conference, we'll deconstruct this shift we discussed earlier, moving from isolation and fragmentation to integration and inclusion. What does that look like? And we'll think about the identity shift in teacher roles and the skills teachers need to develop to effectively co-plan and co-teach. And how do schools build capacity for collaboration to happen? And then also, once collaboration is happening at a school, how can you leverage that as a force for school change? Because it really, we can build capacity for collaboration, but we can also build capacity through collaboration. And I am doing a couple of workshops. I really appreciate the opportunity to serve the Senya community in this way. So we'll look at how do we find language in the learning? And like a fish swimming in water, teachers are surrounded by language all the time. So taking a step back and recognizing how language operates as a medium of learning will help teachers to hopefully develop some deliberate strategies for using language in intentional ways. We'll also look at translanguaging as a practice and as a pedagogy, how the intentional intermixing of languages as students both use all their languages, their entire linguistic repertoire as a tool for learning and as an expression of their unique identity is something that schools can embrace, understand, and utilize. And then we'll also talk about this partnership between EAL and learning support, how it's an essential partnership. What are some barriers? What are some bridges? And how we can continue to build on some of the shared foundations that we have and what that looks like on the ground.
That's good stuff, John. And just as a reminder, a pre-conference for people listening who may not know is a chance for participants to spend one full day with one of our experts. We have three, and you are one of those. So when you sign up for a pre-conference, you are there all day diving deep.
So. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to have the opportunity for folks to engage with pre-conferences, because often even in a 2 or 3 hour session, conversation's just getting started and people want to share what they're learning. And so building that community throughout the course of a day allows us to go deeply, build some of those connections, and hopefully send teachers home with some new tools in their toolbox to be able to apply right away.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's circle back to that teaser you gave us at the beginning of the podcast. What is this big announcement you have to share?
Well, it is very exciting, and it hasn't launched officially yet, but some colleagues and I from the School of Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison have proposed and funding has been approved for a new multilingual learner research center. And so this will investigate both in the US context and in the global context some of the really important issues around teaching and learning for multilingual learners. So I'm excited because this provides an opportunity for us to leverage our existing community of schools. I talked about the 500 schools that are members of the WIDA International School Consortium to shift from an assessment-focused network to a research-focused network, and then to provide opportunities for international schools to engage in research and action research and to be able to benefit from research done in international contexts. And you know this, Lori, we don't have enough really good research that attends to international school contexts, and they're such unique, vibrant, dynamic contexts. So I'm looking forward to sharing more information about that. Make sure you stay tuned to the the WIDA newsletter, and we'll launch this center this summer, and looking forward to the opportunities that it provides for educators and students around the world.
That is big news. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
So excited.
I'm looking forward to it. And now that it's been approved, it's a lot to do, and I'm excited to work with partners and partner organizations like CENI around the world to engage in this work together. And through the research practice partnership, again, we won't only be conducting research, but we'll also be working with schools to help co-construct a research agenda, and then to be able to have intellectual play dates with scholars around the world to share what we're learning and what it means for teaching and learning.
That's great. Well, and I'll also add the WIDA information to our show notes for the podcast. I'm sure you're all hearing my cat meowing in the background now, so I apologize for that. But yeah, great stuff, John. Thank you
so
much.
It's cat dinner time.
Yes.
And it also means it's the end of the podcast. So thank you, Lori. I appreciate the opportunity again to work so much together with CENIA as an organization, and the opportunity to have a conversation with you to reconnect on the podcast.
Always great chatting with you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's show. For more information, including how to subscribe and show notes, please head to our website. That's CENIAinternational.org/podcasts. Until next time, cheers.